Hello, and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with you every day, every Tuesday, at lunchtime, and at your convenience at thevoiceofvashon.org/realtalk. Real Talk is a show where we explore issues and questions from every angle we can possibly get. And today, this is a different angle on the pandemic, because as we're all home, eating a lot, trying to take care of ourselves in new ways, it's important to pay attention to our gut. And my guest today is Dr. Lisa Morse of Fern Cove Natural Medicine here on Vashon Island, and she is a specialist in our guts. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Susan. Happy to be here.
Dr. Lisa, I'm happy to say.
Yes.
What is it about our gut that is so important? And also, when you say that, exactly what body part are we talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the body part that I'm talking about is actually our gut is one continuous, it's a slang term for this one continuous pathway from our mouth to our stomach and to our intestines. And so what I'm really focused on, I like to focus on the whole gut, but what I think we want to talk about today is what's in the intestines, and that's the microbiome. And microbiome is a fancy word for the bugs, the bacteria, the yeast, and the viruses that are in our gut. And it's so important to have a good balance of bugs in your gut because it affects the whole body. And I think that's, you know, especially right now with this, with the virus that is so prevalent, we really have to have a good gut environment and a good microbiome.
Is a healthy microbiome an immune, what shall I say, an immunity defense against the coronavirus, in your view?
It is. So there's several things, several ways I could go with that question, but I really want to focus on, you know, why people are more susceptible to this virus and become sicker is because of higher levels of inflammation in the body. And so that comes back to the gut, because normally our gut is supposed to be very intact, and it's not permeable, so it doesn't let things through into our bloodstream. And so if it is what we call, there's this slang term called a leaky gut. If we have a leaky gut that's not intact, we are letting things through that shouldn't be getting through into our bloodstream, and that creates inflammation in the body. So to circle back around, I had said when we have more inflammation in the body, we're more susceptible to becoming severely ill with the virus.
So what kind of behaviors or diets cause the gut to leak and thereby create inflammation?
Yeah, it's so for sure. There's several things that contribute to a leaky gut. The biggest one I find to be is actually goes back to the microbiome. But also, in addition to the microbiome, stress can cause a leaky gut. And then also alcohol can cause a leaky gut. What else? It's really about the bacteria. And so as far as diet affects the bugs that are living in our gut. If we're eating a very sugary diet, we're feeding different bugs, different yeasts. And so that can change the microbiome. Our diet can change the microbiome, which then allows the gut to be leaky. So there's several things that come into play.
You mentioned that stress can lead to leaky gut and alcohol, and I suspect those are both things that we who are sheltering at home and terrified of whether we're facing the end of the world are probably having more of. Stress, hopefully or intentionally mitigated by alcohol, kind of a vicious circle. Yeah.
So, it is, for sure.
So are we more susceptible then to the coronavirus?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the most important thing that we can do. So in regards to the virus, you know, there's certain things that I've been talking to my patients about focusing on. Stress is one of them. Diet is another. Sleep. And then also the gut health. But out of those four, I feel the most confident to say that stress is a huge player right now, because when we're stressed, well, it results in more inflammation in our body, but it also suppresses the immune system. Mm. I have kind of an interesting story about that. My own personal experience with stress. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, I would.
Okay. So I joined Toastmasters a couple of years ago in, you know, hopes to, it was actually being on the Voice of Vashon. I wanted to speak better. I mm-hmm. realized when I was doing my radio show, I wasn't speaking very well. And so, but I was stressed about speaking in public. And when I did my first speech, I ended up getting shingles after the speech. Which is pretty crazy. So shingles is the same as the chickenpox virus, and the chickenpox virus, if we have it as a child, you know, it still lives in our cells. It's sleeping or it's kind of dormant. But when we have something stressful, it will reactivate, and that's when it comes out as the shingles. And so that simple act of doing a public speech where I was very nervous caused the shingles virus to thrive. And so same with, you know, the coronavirus right now. If we are stressed and worried and fearful and anxious, the virus has more of an ability to thrive in our body when we're exposed. And I say when we're exposed because there is a very high likelihood we all will be exposed at some point. It could be in another year or maybe 2 years, but we will likely be exposed. And so that's why I'm trying to encourage my patients and everybody to really take care of themselves right now.
So if it's essentially a done deal that we're going to be exposed, if we, what are the things we can do to, I guess the aim is not necessarily to avoid catching it because we're probably going to. The aim would be to keep the viral attack as minimal as possible. How can we do
that? Yeah, so again, it's focusing on those four areas that I mentioned, the diet, your diet, and your sleep, and stress, which we kind of talked about, and also the gut health. So I'm happy to elaborate on any of those for details. We talked a little bit about stress, and so I usually tell people, you know, find some way to deal with your stress. Everyone has different preferences. And so, you know, some people may want to meditate or pray. Some people exercise. Actually, that's one that I really encourage is exercise to help reduce stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people just want to laugh, which is great too. But everyone has to find their own way that they can reduce the stress. So, yeah,
laughing, spending time with friends, if there's any possible way to do that, all of those things can reduce stress. So what about sleep? If we're anxious, sleeping gets pretty tough.
It's true. That is very true. It's just really important because sleep is, you know, when we don't get adequate sleep, we have more inflammation. And then also, if we're getting enough sleep, which is great, we have higher amounts of what we call natural killer cells. And those cells actually fight viruses. And so it's important to get a good amount of sleep. Now, I usually recommend around 8 hours. And as far as preparing for sleep, you know, it's important to be winding down at the end of the day, doing something relaxing. Again, it's different for everybody. You know, maybe it's taking a bath or reading a novel. But if you are particularly anxious about what's going on right now with the virus, the first thing I would say is you know, not to watch the news. it's not helpful if you are anxious about this. And also, you know, journaling. you know, writing things down or, you know, talking with somebody. I really encourage people to, if they are having anxiety about it, to find someone to talk to. You know, it might have to be a professional, and probably would be a good idea. Or maybe some people can just talk with their, you know, family member or friend and just, yeah, kind of get it out, get everything out, and do that before you go to bed. The journaling, that's where the journaling can be helpful, so that your mind doesn't have to deal with those anxieties. You've got them out on paper. And
so you're basically saying do that emotional brain dump before you go to bed.
Yes.
So it's
right.
Not...
Otherwise...
Yeah, so it's not disturbing your sleep.
Yeah, it will keep you up at night if you don't.
What about old remedies like drinking milk before you go to bed? Or are there things one can eat before going to bed that would help with sleep?
Yeah, warm milk, that is an old remedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
What I've found is that, or what I've learned is like, there's certain foods that increase tryptophan, which is something calming in the brain. I'm not sure if warm milk has tryptophan in it, but I hear of like turkey, that's why they say like people, you know, after their Thanksgiving dinner, they feel sleepy.
Right.
Because there's a lot of tryptophan in there.
So should we keep a drumstick around before we go to bed?
Yeah, maybe that's the key. But I certainly think there's also something to be said for rituals or, you know, what makes you feel calm or comfortable. And so if warm milk makes you feel calm, or you're nostalgia from when you were a kid and you drank that, takes you back there, then I think go for it. Whatever it takes to get a good night's sleep.
Go ahead. What about the notion of routine, like going to bed at the same time of night? I've heard that recommended as an aid to sleep. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's great. I think that going to bed at the same time, waking at the same time, having a routine, your body gets into that routine, and you know, it's more likely to happen. If people are staying up too late or, you know, sleeping way in, it sets off the nervous system that there's no pattern here. And I also oftentimes recommend, that's called the circadian rhythm. The circadian rhythm is, you know, how our cortisol wakes us up in the morning, and then as the day goes on, it decreases, and then at night it makes us sleepy. And so I recommend for keeping having a routine keeps the circadian rhythm in a good place, but also the lights. So at night, we want to be in more dim light, and particularly not really using electronic devices, because those emit blue light that suppresses our melatonin. And melatonin is a hormone that helps us sleep. And so keeping things dim at night, and then, you know, not using electronic devices for a couple hours before bedtime is really important for good sleep. Now, in the morning, that's the time to go out and, you know, get into the sunlight. And, you know, right now, perfect time, because we're coming up on summer here, and we have more sun than we usually do during the winter. But exposing yourself to that light helps to set the circadian rhythm. And so those are two things, dark at night and light in the morning.
And it's getting dark later and later. So if you want to go to bed at 9 o'clock these days, it's still light outside. And I'm curious about the use of electronic devices, which I think is something that is so much a part of people's lives right now, particularly as they're sheltering at home and looking for some sort of connection through electronic devices. What do you recommend? Like, should I shut down the TV, shut down the computer an hour before I want to go to sleep?
I would say an hour to 2 hours is ideal. I know it's hard. I mean, in fact, you know, the electronic devices, I feel like they are slightly addictive, not slightly, very addictive.
Very, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like setting that boundary with yourself and saying, you know, saying like, hey, I, you know, I've been using this all day. I don't need to be looking at this anymore. And I need to like nourish myself and do things that are, you know, helping to calm me down and to boost my melatonin so I can sleep well.
And so, what about the notion of taking melatonin supplements?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I usually, you know, ask people, are they having a problem falling asleep or staying asleep? And if someone is having a problem falling asleep, I do find that, you know, anxiety, worries, that kind of stuff can cause that. But another cause can be low melatonin. And actually, children have the highest amounts of melatonin, and as we age, it decreases. And it's interesting that there's some studies out showing that melatonin is good for not just sleeping, but also it's good for decreasing inflammation, particularly in the lungs. And so it's kind of an interesting connection where we're talking about getting good sleep and protecting yourself from the virus. So I usually tell people if they're having the problem falling asleep, then it's possible that they may be low on melatonin, but also, you know, of course, check with your doctor to make sure that it's okay and doesn't interact with anything that you're taking. But then if you're having a problem staying asleep, that's a different issue, and probably melatonin is not the answer for you.
What would?
Good question. There's a myriad of causes of that. I often find low blood sugar during the night can wake people up, because their blood sugar drops. And even if they're not hungry, the blood sugar could still be low, and then that pumps, the body pumps out kind of stress hormones. And so making sure you're eating a good snack before bed, like with some protein and fat, like nuts or some cheese or something to kind of tide you over. So that would be my first go-to for waking during the night.
Maybe that's where the warm milk idea comes from.
Maybe protein and fat. You know, if you're drinking whole milk.
Well, your comment about melatonin and kids and melatonin as a defense against the virus is very interesting to me, because until recently we've been saying that kids are not getting the virus, and I'm wondering if their higher melatonin levels might be protecting them.
Yes, I have thought of that, and also heard that from other doctors as well. So very interesting, yeah. But then, yeah, I was also perplexed by the cases I've seen with younger kids. But, you know, that's just like a general rule. Everybody's so different, and we don't know what was going on with those little ones that have gotten really sick.
Right.
So,
you're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM. Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and today we're talking about your gut and how it affects your immune system and so many other things with Dr. Lisa Morse from Fern Cove Natural Medicine. Dr. Lisa, we've been talking about the gut and how it affects your immune system, how a leaky gut can cause inflammation, which reduces the immune system. What else does our gut affect?
Yeah, so our gut, it's so many things. But I would say mood is a big one. So depression and anxiety can be common with gut dysfunction or gut imbalance. The thing is that in our gut, we have cells that produce what are called neurotransmitters. So one of the most important ones is serotonin. And serotonin is a hormone that is, or a neurotransmitter, that's a feel-good. You know, when people are depressed, sometimes doctors will give medications that are serotonin, it's called SSRIs, or serotonin selective reuptake inhibitors. So people have more serotonin around. So the thing is that I like to focus on, well, why is the serotonin low? Let's work on that. So the cells, certain cells in the gut that make serotonin, and in fact, 90% of our serotonin is made in the gut, those cells are very responsive to the what the gut environment, like I was talking about the microbiome. Mm-hmm. So if the microbiome is off, then those cells might not be making the serotonin that they need to for us to have a good mood and also to not be anxious.
That's very interesting. Someone, when I said we were going to be talking about the gut today, said that the gut is the second brain. And I've often thought, I've often thought that serotonin is produced in the brain. But what you're telling us is that it's produced in the gut. How does it get to the brain? Yes. That may be a really basic question. But what's the connection?
That's just so interesting that you said that, the second brain, because as I was talking about it, I was thinking that to myself. But, so like I said, it's made in the gut, and it gets dispersed throughout our body, the serotonin, and, you know, goes to our brain. And if we don't make enough, then, you know, our mood can be off and our sleep can be off. It actually is also important for sleep, which we know is important. So just important to have the right microbiome, the right bugs in your gut.
So how do I get the right bugs in my gut?
Yeah, good question. So oftentimes, one of the biggest things that disrupts the microbiome is antibiotics. And obviously they're needed sometimes, but it will disrupt the gut flora and really, like, set it back. And so it sometimes can take about to a year to rebuild that flora. The other thing is diet can play a big part in our microbiome and what we're eating. And if we're eating lots of sugary things, that changes the flora there. And then also stress. Mm-hmm. Stress plays a big part in our gut bacteria. And so there are certain foods that can help your microbiome. Sometimes I will start there with patients. I always like to start with the lowest force in intervention, and foods can be really good for that, and like probiotics and prebiotics. I don't know if you've heard of those, Susan. But
explain to our listeners. What's the difference?
Okay, good. Yeah. So probiotics are foods that actually have the bacteria in them. And so these are things like yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut, kimchi, kombucha, or miso, or olives.
And pickles?
Pickles also, yes. But you have to buy the pickles that are refrigerated. You can't buy the ones that are just room temperature, because those ones, they don't have live organisms in them when they're not refrigerated.
Oh.
So So all of these things, even like the sauerkraut too, you want to buy it refrigerated, not just at room temperature. So eating all those foods can help to, you know, build up the good flora. Now, there's other foods that are called prebiotic foods, and those are things that feed the good bugs. So not only do we want to eat them, but then when we want to feed them, we want to give them food to help them thrive. And so those are things like, it's really cool. So those are things like artichokes are a good source, asparagus, celery, carrots, broccoli stalks, beans, legumes, and let's see, what else? Leeks and onions are really good as well. So all those things are food for our good bugs.
It sounds like a category that includes a lot of cellulose. Would that be?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
All those. Yeah. The celery, the broccoli stalks, which is what a lot of folks throw away.
Yeah, I know.
Are good for us. It is kind of funny to think about a whole gang of bacteria in our gut that are looking to be fed or to be killed. How do we get rid of the bad ones? Is that just by feeding the good ones?
Sometimes that's enough. It just depends on the person's, you know, history and whether they've taken antibiotics and how stressed they are and what their diet's like. But I oftentimes have to take people on a more intense, to a more intense, it's not intense is a strong word, but a more proactive place where we do a gut restoration protocol, which involves taking spore-based probiotics, usually regular probiotic pills that you take. They don't really, when you take them, they don't really like take hold in your gut and establish a home there. You have to take them all the time because you're pooping them out and just continually taking them. But the spore-based probiotic actually goes in and it modulates, we call modulates the gut environment. So it will kill off bad bugs and it will help the good ones to thrive. Uh-huh. And then, yeah, so it's pretty cool. And then from there we go on to doing prebiotic supplements, which are specifically made to feed the good bugs, and then building up the mucus layer, which I haven't really talked about too much, but I've been focusing mostly on the bacteria, which is a big part of it, but also we need to have a strong mucus layer in our gut that's protective and keeps it not leaking.
How do we keep that healthy? I mean, it sounds like most of the time we're trying to get rid of mucus.
Right, that's true. So part of it is about the bacteria. It all comes back to the bacteria. Hmm. So there's certain strains of good bacteria in our guts that help to make the mucus. And so, just focusing on, either with the gut health foods, probiotic and prebiotic foods, or, doing the gut restoration protocol that I do with my patients with the spore-based probiotic and adding in this it's a product that builds up the mucus lining of the gut. So,
and so that isn't something that could be done without a supplement? How do we build our mucus without a supplement?
Well, like I said, what I said was it's usually the gut, the certain strains of bacteria in the gut can help increase the mucus. And so what I would say is, doing it without a supplement, just focus on eating your probiotic foods and eating your prebiotic foods so that we can hope to build those certain strains.
Dr. Lisa Morse, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to get back to the notion of the coronavirus as a societal or community disease. And you said, which really struck me, we will all be exposed. Mm-hmm. There's really no escape. Yeah. And I try to listen to public health experts and folks who are saying, if we continue to shelter at home and wear masks, we won't get it. But if we don't get it, will we create the herd immunity that we need to basically shut it down? What are your views on that?
Yeah, no, I think that is important. But what I also think is that it's important that people be in a healthy space when they do get exposed. So that's my part, my role in this is to help my patients and help the community build up their, well, I like to call it building up their armor. And I'm doing a series of YouTube videos on it now. So I want to help people focus on building up their armor so that, when we do get exposed, we can handle it and we are able to build up the herd immunity.
You're offering videos on how to build your armor. How do we find those?
Yeah, so you can, what I would say is to subscribe to my email list. So if you go to my website, www.fernconaturalmedicine.com, and you can send me a message there, and you'll put your email in, you'll be on my email list. And the other way is you can just go to YouTube, www.youtube.com, and you can put in Dr. Lisa Morse, and my channel should come up.
As we draw to a close here, Dr. Lisa, I'd like to repeat for folks the sort of the four legs that you emphasize with your patients to help us prevent getting the virus, or since it's inevitable, we will get it, how to keep it at a minimum. What are those four tenets?
Yes, those four tenets are diet, stress, sleep, and gut health. And like I said, stress, I feel like, is one of the most important ones.
I cannot thank you. Stress, yeah. And I was looking up the origins of the term gutsy, and there aren't really a lot of origin explanations, but it does talk about the definition being plucky and courageous. And so I guess good gut health gives us courage against the coronavirus.
Absolutely.
And whatever else might be coming up. And there's so much coming at us right now. Dr. Lisa Morse, thanks again. Check out her website at ferncovemedicine.com. Thanks so much for listening to Real Talk.
Yeah.
And thank you for joining me, Dr. Lisa.
You're welcome. My pleasure.